Good afternoon, gardeners. Welcome to Garden Planet. You're with Selena and special guests Penny Clifton and Ian Henderson. And today we're going to be talking about gardens to visit. Now, Penny and Ian both have a garden tour company called Hikoi Garden Tours, and they take people overseas on garden trips, and it's a wonderful venture. Now, so gardens to visit. Tell us, listeners, why should we go visiting some gardens?
Visiting gardens is a wonderful occupation and activity to do, very inspirational. If you are interested in cultivating and growing plants, or if you're interested in art and architecture, our garden tours will provide you with lots of inspiring fodder for your thoughts and your life. And you know, if gardens to visit in your own locality is lots of fun too. So we'll talk about that too, Selena.
Oh, yes. So everyone who lives on this planet should go and visit some gardens to get some inspiration.
Yeah, the beauty about going to gardens overseas is that we get to see gardens that you don't normally see here. We have very limited types of gardens in New Zealand, and if you're limited to those, you're limited to the ideas that you might have about what gardens are.
Mm. The gardens, I think a lot of us look at gardens in the magazines, or we see gardens in books that aren't New Zealand gardens, and we thought, wow, look at all the variety of plants and designs and styles, and, you know, just it's wonderful just to see, like, all the different gardens that you can visit. So tell us, how do you get into garden design? And did that going to see different gardens influence how you think of a garden?
Well, I began gardening when I was about three, I think.
So, oh, that's very young.
So it's been a long kind of career. But I had a gap in between where I was farming. But I eventually realised that farming was no good for me at all. And so it was a good idea to try something else. And it seemed to be the natural thing was to garden. And more importantly, even than gardening as such, was designing a garden. And I think that's kind of where I got the greatest sense of satisfaction, mm-hmm. was being able to bring a whole lot of ideas to gardens, not just hands in the soil.
Yeah.
But both, that's important as well, of course.
Just getting those ideas, eh?
Yeah.
I think of garden design as something that maybe you're faced with a blank slate, or a property that you want to do something with, and you want to have a layout or of the garden so you can walk around and enjoy the space. It's how I think of garden design. What about you, Penny?
I think that's a good start. One of the things that we always try to talk with our students about is the idea that a blank slate is never a blank slate. There's always a context.
Yes.
And understanding the processes in the land around the site that you're dealing with is one great way of gaining inspiration about what you might want to do in that garden space. So how's the land form around that space? What is nature doing in terms of plants and animals? What is the culture of the place? How are gardens expressed in neighbouring areas? And then, of course, what thoughts the individual owners of the space may bring with them to the idea of a garden, and how you can express all of that context.
I just, like, I love visiting gardens, and I don't always have the funds to go all around the world, but in Auckland we have some wonderful gardens that you can visit, and also ones open to the public that you can go for free. So I just want to touch on some that are open that we can all go along to and find some inspiration, and then we can talk about going further afield. How's about that?
Sounds good.
Okay, so one garden that I think every Aucklander ought to visit, and anyone visiting overseas ought to go visit, is the Auckland Domain Winter Gardens. And they're just lovely because Right now, this time of year, it's cold, but the winter gardens are very warm. And they have such an amazing variety of plants. And they're just shown off beautifully, and the gardeners look after them really well. So I did a little bit of research about how those gardens came about. So George Grey, one of the governors of New Zealand, it was his idea to have the plants from England or where he was from to kind of get them to grow in Auckland and, you know, see if they would do well. And he just loved plants. So he bought 80 hectares of the Auckland domain to create the, you know, a park for everyone to enjoy. And that was back in 1845. And he was part of the Auckland Acclimatisation Society. And they raised lots and lots of young trees and see if they would grow here. And that was the genesis of the Auckland domain. And then, you know, he went to Kauai Island and then planted more things there. And it's very exotic. And you've got many trees there that are still from his time. And then in 1928, the winter gardens were completed. And they have a tropical house and a temperate house, and they have a beautiful lily pond and a fernery and pergolas and walkways, and it's just wonderful place to go visit after you've been to see the museum and had a stroll around the domain park.
The trees at the domain are wonderful, aren't they?
Yeah.
Around the duck pond there is one of my favourite areas to go to look at trees. I think those glass houses were designed by Gummer Ford. Does that sound right, Ian?
Yeah, that sounds right.
And they are a magnificent example of Victorian architecture with their lovely glass ceilings and so on. And as you say, lovely to be inside on a warm, on a cold day like today, and with plants from all around the world.
It's one of the few places in New Zealand, but particularly in Auckland, that has a very intense and fulsome kind of palette of plants.
Yeah.
It's very intense.
Amazing. I mean, just so many plants crammed into, displayed in one place. All colour, flowers, and the tropical plants, amazing. You get chocolate trees and bananas and all that. And there's even a special plant that had only flowered after, I think, 10 years, and that was the stinking arum lily.
That was amazing.
So, it's a very rare tropical plant that smells.
And they actually have reports, if you keep your ears open to the right channels, that tell you when it's ready to flower and when it's going to open and all that kind of thing. So
will it flower once a year or something?
No.
It's just more random than that.
Every couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But there are also the wonderful big Victoria water lilies in that tropical house that do flower every year. And there's reports on that too. and they are magnificent big white blooms with enormous upstanding leaves.
One thing I'd like to ask you designers about is apparently that greenhouse or the whole structure of the garden and the design was made in the Jekyll and Lutyens style for the arts and crafts. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Well, Jekyll and Lutyens style came as a kind of after the Victorian era, when there were two or three major movements in England in garden styles, eventually ending up with quite a wild, almost wilderness kind of garden.
Mm-hmm.
And the Jekyll was a colourist originally, so she painted until she went blind or near blind. And so her creative outlet then became gardening.
Right, yep.
Lutyens was a young architect when she met him, mm-hmm. and he was into the arts and crafts. And it was a marriage of the garden arts and crafts and architectural arts and crafts, which kind of developed under the guidance of both of those two.
Yeah.
And led on, of course, eventually to places like Sissinghurst. But they did lots of gardens together.
Mm.
He constructed the gardens yep. with garden walls and
the layout and everything.
All yep. that sort of stuff. And then she filled them with plants.
Oh.
So that was the kind of
partnership.
Yes.
Yeah.
That evolved. And then, of course, in many respects, much of English gardening has been a follow-up to that.
Yes, because they were wildly popular in their day.
Yes, and still are.
Yeah, because they created some beautiful, world-famous gardens.
Yes, yep.
As you mentioned, Sissinghurst, which is a castle in Kent in England, and it's got a beautiful garden surrounding the castle. It's so romantic looking. I've never been there, but I've seen videos and pictures and heard all about it, and I'm like, oh, that sounds so romantic.
Yeah, it's really lovely.
So have you guys been there?
I have, yes.
Oh, what was your impression?
I was blown away with the horticultural aspect of the garden floriferousness.
Yes.
And amazing maintenance on the garden, so it just looked pristine and glorious, which I think it does a lot of the year, so there must be an awful lot of person hours that goes into keeping it like that. But that marriage of, as Ian described, the structure of the walls and hedges used there in relation to the abundance of the flowering beds is just quite something to experience and take a journey through, because it is very much designed to perambulate around in and out of all these different spaces. It's very lovely.
So a lot of people say they're like garden rooms, like you'd be decorating a house, but also gardens can also be like outdoor rooms. Is that right?
Absolutely right. Yeah. Yes, that is the one that's comes to my mind is called the Rondelle at Sissinghurst, where it's a circular room, and from that sort of node where you can kind of cleanse your palate almost from the other rooms and just a green lawn space with a hedge, then you go off to these other rooms to experience the white garden or the red area and so on.
Oh, yes,
so
white garden and
very famous.
Lots of flowers and roses and all different white flowers. And we have a sort of white garden in Auckland. You know, the Parnell Rose Garden?
That's right.
There's a Nancy Steen's garden, which is a little separate area off to the side of the roses. Beautiful garden. And when you walk in right to the end, there's a fountain, and that little round area is a white garden.
It's lovely to see the perennials mixed in with the roses there, isn't it? I prefer that to roses on their own.
Yes.
That abundance is lovely.
It shows them off. And, like, roses don't flower all the time, so when you've got the other flowers coming up, it's, gorgeous.
Garden rooms have the advantage of being able to create separate things in different spaces so that they don't interfere with one another, but also to create a journey through the garden so that you move from one to another. So they kind of structure the garden in that sense of both how to lay them out, but also how you experience it.
So it's all like about walking through the garden, experiencing different aspects of it and different moods maybe.
Yep. In different seasons.
Sometimes different functions.
Yeah.
And also different amounts of enclosure. When we make a garden room, we think of it like architects do, in that we think about what's the ground plane going to be, what are the walls going to be made of, and whether there's any overhead opportunities to give you shelter or shade. So those are fun to play with.
The carpet.
Yeah.
The wall hangings and the ceiling.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the doors.
Oh, and
the doorways. So the ways in which you kind of constrict space when you go through a doorway or through an arbor or something like that, you then can have this kind of experience of being channeled or held tight and then opening out into wider space.
I love garden arches. They're my thing.
Right. Yes.
Like just going under, you're going into a different space, and it's you got maybe some flowers overhead. and you just know it's like an entry into somewhere mysterious or different.
It's intimate because the plants are close to you,
yes,
both vertically and overhead in an arbor here.
Yeah. So I had this experience of putting up an arch. I bought one off Trade Me. I thought, I'm going to grow a climber over it. And it's not going to be roses because roses are prickly. So I grew a Hardenbergia, which is like a coral pea. It's an Australian plant. And it's flowering right now.
Oh, in the winter is a good time to have some flowers, isn't it?
Yeah, got beautiful white flowers, but you can also get purple ones. And just a lovely and very hardy climber to, and it will, you can trim it back, it's no big hassle, and just looks gorgeous. All right, and so the whole experience of going into garden, going to visit a garden, it's also for pleasure. Take your family, have a picnic, and also weddings. People love to have weddings in gardens. And at the winter garden, there's a cafe and you can have high tea. So all about enjoyment and pleasure too. One thing that if you want to go experience more gardens and you want to know where are all the gardens, like how do I know which ones to go to, do you know about the Gardens, New Zealand Gardens Trust?
Yes, indeed.
Yes, let's hear about that.
That's a wonderful scheme whereby gardeners around the country have banded together and created a registry of great gardens to visit. You can search by area or find a route to suggested route to go for a day trip around perhaps North Auckland or something like that. All the gardens have been assessed as up to particular standards, and information is given about when they're open, how much the entry fee is, and what you're likely to find there. So if you just Google New Zealand Gardens Trust, you'll find their website and be able to search for great gardens.
Yes, and they have those 5 or 6 star ratings. They're really exceptional, aren't they?
That's right.
So some 5 or 6 star rated ones close where we are. So we'll just give you a few so you can go look them up. There is Earley's out in Whitford, beautiful private garden, but it's just amazing.
Enormous. Bring your walking shoes. Big wetland area, yep, as well as the main garden.
So as we mentioned before, Parnell Rose Gardens close by. Auckland Botanic Gardens.
Yes. That's come a long way over the nearly 30 years. It must be 30 years since I've been visiting it. The trees used to be small and there used to be a lot of open space, but boy, it's developed in that time and it's getting better and better. They're doing a major redevelopment of a few areas out there at the moment, but for garden interests such as going to see a collection of palms or of conifers or of herbs, there's great collections of different types of plants that you can go to do some research for your own garden.
Camellias.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
But also gardens that are collections rather that are regional. So it's African plants, South African plants.
Oh, yes. Yep.
So it's got very many different ways in which it categorises plants. And then there are the plants of Gondwana land, which is the old connections originally between places like Australia, New Guinea, mm-hmm, South Africa, South America, etc. And so because of that connection, we have plants that are related to one another. And so there's a collection of Araucarias, which includes our kauri tree.
Oh, yes.
Which is an agathis. So there's collections like that and it's relatives, all its cousins.
Oh, wow.
So it's interesting to go and see those kinds of collections as well.
Talking about hemispheres, a lot of South African plants and South American plants will do well in New Zealand climates and gardens because from the same hemisphere, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Whereas some of the transplants from the Northern Hemisphere don't do so well.
Out of their league, aren't they, climate-wise?
Far away and they miss their home.
Yep.
It's a great place to go and walk to at the Botanic Gardens, and the Visitors Centre is a great source of inspiration. They have some very good displays there, including art work on display. There was some fantastic botanical art there a while ago, and there's a good cafe, and there's great education programs too, so look out for their workshops and days where you can go and learn about particular things.
Also, sometimes in the summer they have the sculptures, like a show of sculptures just in the garden. Yeah. So
that's a wonderful way to
appreciate
get another layer of enjoyment from the gardens.
One other one for what I've mentioned is the Eden Gardens in Epsom. You know the Eden Gardens?
Yep.
So they were made out of an old quarry on the side of Mount Eden. And it's filled with plants now. It's amazing.
It's an amazing place to go, isn't it? A lot of flowering plants there in great abundance and intensity. So a great place to go in spring, which is coming up soon, isn't that? So
yes.
Magnolias and camellias and azaleas are well represented in that collection. And all sorts of unusual and delicate little things tucked in under those bigger plants.
If you like ferns, I guess we got ferns in the fernery at the Winter Gardens, but there is a place up on the North Shore called Fern Glen. Have you heard about that one?
Yes.
Yeah, amazing. The lady, I think it's Muriel Fisher.
That's right.
Who created that garden was so enthusiastic about ferns, and at that time the development of the North Shore, they were cutting down the forests left and right, but they saved this little patch or this gully that had lots and lots of ferns in it and created this old garden. So I thought that was pretty special.
It's a really interesting characteristic of the North Shore is those gullies and the public walkways and little patches of bush that have been maintained because of the steepness of the site was too steep for housing.
Yeah.
But yes, Muriel Fisher's garden tour has taken full advantage of that bush reserve. Great place to go and see native plants and her greenhouses and things that she got funding for over the many decades she gardened there include ferns and she really wanted alpine plants to be another focus, so there are some of those to be seen also.
And one more I thought I might mention, there was this place called Mincha up in Coatesville, so not that far away, very English style. It's quite a big property and they have a Georgian style house, so the surrounding gardens are just like what you would imagine in a Jane Austen novel.
Indeed.
Like park-like grounds, strolls where you think a horse and carriage could come by. quite an amazing what they've created there.
They're part of the Gardens Trust, so the information about their garden is on their website.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm going with a trip with the Institute of Horticulture, Auckland Branch, in October.
Oh, wow. Mm. So tell us about the Auckland Design Fest that's coming up. Want to know more about that.
For 2 days in November, there will be 18 gardens open, which is going to be a garden treat. The people who design them are mostly members of our Garden Design Society of New Zealand. And it's going to be a truly wonderful occasion, lots to celebrate, money to be raised for children's charities, and a great day out for all concerned. There is a bus tour option, which I run, and we've got quite a concentration in the sort of central and the central suburbs this year. Often we've had outliers on the North Shore and down south, but this year it's quite central, so it is going to make it easy for people to visit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the dates again? November.
I'm going to have to look that up and tell you again in a minute.
Okay.
I think it's 23rd and 24th, but I'll check.
Listeners, keep an eye out, but you can Google that, so Garden Design Fest. Ian, why don't we just, I'm just going to talk to you about some garden etiquette when you're going to visit some gardens. What's some tips that you want to share?
one of the things that gardeners want to do is, of course, replicate what they find in other people's gardens.
Yeah.
And where do you get the material for that?
Uh-oh.
Easiest.
State cutting.
Is as you're walking down the path, taking a snip. But, you know, that's kind of not the right thing to do, because eventually people lose their plants that way. So, but, you know, there are some rogues who still do that kind of stuff. You need to kind of respect the plant life and people's plants in those gardens. So that's not something you can do. When we go overseas, of course, all of that sort of thing is really well managed, so it's almost impossible to do that kind of thing. But it is possible to do that here, because we do tend to have things like plants close alongside the path and all those kinds of things. So it is possible, but not the appropriate thing to do.
Take photos, not cuttings.
Exactly. Exactly, yes. And be careful where you walk too, because you can, if you go wander off the track, you can start to do things like consolidate the ground and stuff like that.
Not
if it's,
walk
if
where
it's
you're
walked.
Meant to walk.
Yeah, that's correct, yeah.
Would you, if the garden's free, of course you can go visit any time, but if it's a private garden, what's the best thing to do? You'd call in first?
Yeah, well, that depends on whether it's normally open to the public or whether it's how it's available to experience. Definitely, if it's a place that's not normally open, you'd have to ring first or something like that.
Sometimes there's an entry fee, but sometimes there's a koha.
Yep.
So, the gardeners who own it or design or make it, they spend a lot of time and effort making it beautiful for you to enjoy. So if you give them something, that just helps them, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I guess one other thing would be just to stay in the major part of the garden. Don't poke your head around into little secret back areas for where you're not supposed to go, and don't look in the windows. That would be the other two things.
Okay. So we all want to be on our best gardening manners.
Exactly.
Gardening behaviour. All right, Garden Planet listeners, I hope that's all very inspirational and helpful for you. We might talk about our overseas gardens in another episode. Would that be all right? Because there's so much to cover.
Sure.
So I think we'll leave that at that for today. But tune in next time for more on Garden Planet. How about that?
Great. Thanks, Selena.
All right. Bye, everyone.
Turn, 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 and a time to every purpose.